different philosophies. And that's why he was such a great leader, because he didn't put people down or ignore them or say a lot of negative things about them simply because they didn't agree with him. He found a way to make a way. And he was always looking at the synthesizing our approach,
Bernard,
rather than dividing.
We are going to have to leave it there. But before we go, I want to wish you a very happy 80th birthday.
Thank you.
Bernard Lafayette, civil rights leader, scholar, longtime friend of the late Congressmember John Lewis, his former roommate. We wish you a very happy birthday. And that does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe, save lives, wear a mask.
Portland.
And it is 8 a.m. at KBOO Portland. It's Wednesday morning. It's time for Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland. Keep it locked right here on your Community Connection.
Hold your head up. Lift the top of your mind. Put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damn it? Look right now, and you will see we're only here by the skin of our teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link with life.
And good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio coming at you once again. I'm Paul Roland, talking at you from my upstairs studio here in the Montevilla neighborhood of Portland, OR. Welcome to all of our listeners in Portland, in the Gorge, down the Willamette Valley, and up into Southwest Washington and beyond, wherever. You know, I even be listening on a computer somewhere, and we welcome you. And I welcome you to call in at 503-231-8187. We got an open day today. I'm all by myself, so I'd love some company. So as I was waiting, I was going to read you some choice tidbits. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to take care of some business first. So last week, I had promised a tribute to the late Klickitat Cascade Yakima Nation elder Johnny Jackson, who passed away a week and a half ago. And I had reached out to my old friend Wilbur Slakish, another Columbia River elder, longtime fighter for his and his people's fishing and other rights here in their homeland. And Wilbur reminded me that in his people's way, they don't talk publicly about someone who is recently deceased, and they wait a year. So he said that in a year we'll revisit this. Of course, I being a European and we having very different traditions, I talked in very glowing terms last week about Johnny Jackson, who I had the privilege to know. Anyway, so with that, get on to our show, which is going to be wide-ranging today. As I was waiting, I was on the Wikipedia site for this Dr. Sheila Emanuel, who is now, you know, in the viral sphere after Trump having tweeted her, I guess it was yesterday. And the Wikipedia page that had lots of choice information crashed, and then I couldn't find it. So maybe someone out there could look it up themselves, but I suspect it just got taken down. Not that they knew that I was going to talk about it on the air. Obviously, I'm not that silly. But anyway, it was kind of disconcerting because that was going to be the start of the show. But I do have a little bit. I mean, so I wanted to talk about the desperate occultism that sort of is taking hold at many levels and has really sort of been, in a lot of ways, at the center of the power structure in this country from the very beginning. Because after all, white supremacy is a cult belief system. There's really no basis for it. The only basis for it is the crazy stuff that they make up, like phrenology, measuring people's skulls to supposedly measure their intelligence, or, I don't know, you name it. The various, the idea that, African people and indigenous people weren't actually human beings, a cult belief system, and form kind of the bedrock of the white supremacist patriarchal system that is still ruling, but seems to be under increased challenge these days with the resurgent Black Lives Matter movement that has really, as my once-a-month guest Jacqueline Keeler said a couple weeks ago, is sort of the point of the spear of a deep challenge to the roots, the very foundations of this system. So anyway, desperate occultism that certainly Trump represents, because obviously he, you know, his ill-got wealth has to be hidden. His failure as a capitalist kingpin, and his basically pyramid scheme strategy is continually getting massive infusions of loans after his initial massive infusion of money from his father got spent, and this prosperity gospel that I don't know if people remember, I had the author of The Money Cult on, Chris Lehman, probably a couple years back now, who talked about Norman Vincent Peale, who was one of the, along with Roy Cohn, was one of the sort of guides, the gurus for Donald Trump. So anyway, Dr. Sheila Emanuel is definitely in this vein of prosperity gospel, and her espousing of hydrochloroquine and other drugs. She said she had cured 360 patients, if I remember the Wikipedia page correctly, not too long ago on the steps of the Supreme Court. She held a press conference and actually had some Republican Congress people there, and said that she had this miracle cure. Of course, I don't think she was able to reveal any published research or her protocols or anything. But so yeah, because Trump is back on the hydroxychloroquine bandwagon, because obviously he's got nothing else, because obviously the complete failure of his regime in addressing the COVID-19 pandemic, basically because, you know, he's beholden to these prosperity gospel capitalist libertarians who will not brook the idea of the federal government actually Well, for one, they don't think it should exist in a lot of ways, and they think it should only exist to enrich them, and it certainly shouldn't exist to actually take care of, be in the business of public health and safeguarding our environment and such things that those of you, I assume, hold dear. So she's a Cameroonian American, the Sheila Emanuel. She's actually a physician. She actually owns the Rehoboth Medical Center, where she's been a physician since October 19, 2019, in Houston. She founded Firepower Ministries and frequently posts about her faith. A lengthy bio on her Facebook page calls her a prophet of God to the nations. One sentence in the profile reads, her attitude toward demonic forces has been described as cutthroat, a warrior to the core. Back to occult beliefs, because this whole idea of, Satan and demonic forces that are kind of at the core in various forms, now in secularized forms, has sort of been at the heart of the the Christian invasion. That's what they thought, that the indigenous people were Satan's legions. And so that the good Puritans who fled for their religious freedom imposed religious tyranny upon all the peoples of the Americas. She's also a wealth transfer coach, including much to herself if she actually owns a medical center. She apparently is quite wealthy. She believes you can be saved, anointed, fire brand, and wealthy too. And it goes on. She has some strange things. Apparently Madonna recently expressed her support, so I don't know. The weirdness in the midst of the tragedy is extreme, to say the least. She's accredited with crusades, health fairs, raising money for orphanages, et cetera, et cetera. I just got to get into some of the more salacious things. Her strange medical claims, including one in which she claims a certain medical issues like endometriosis, cysts, infertility, and impotence are the result of sex with spirit husbands and spirit wives, which Emanuel described as having sex in dreams with witches and demons. And I could go on and on. Okay, so that's Stella Emanuel that now Trump is apparently supporting. And all right, so we're going to talk. We could talk more about the desperate occultism or magical thinking that is kind of rooted in the very highest echelons now, represented by Donald Trump, and is, as people, students of history know, that the Nazis were very steeped in a strange kind of desperate occultism and a bizarre strain of white supremacy that had very dire results. And people are very rightly afraid that this regime could be trying to head, in that direction if Trump is reelected, for sure. If Trump is has a close race and declares the election invalid, if he declares martial law, there's all kinds of scenarios that people are putting out there. And I think that's certainly why there's such a, in addition to the righteous and totally justified calling out of the continued murder of African Americans on the streets by police, I think the tenor and tone of these protests certainly has a lot to do with the Trump administration itself. And of course, if he's going to send federal troops to our cities, he's certainly going to just add fuel to the fire. I've only been down a couple times to the protests myself. I could bore you with the details of why I haven't been more. I kind of feel bad about it. I'm sure a lot of people who, either for whatever reason, aren't able or don't feel able to go down, probably are feeling somewhat left out, feeling not participating fully in this crucial historical moment that we're in, that we need to summon all our resources to combat. There's an article I wanted to talk about, Fighting for Black Lives, Fighting Federal Troops, What Portland NAACP Gets Wrong, comes out on Left Voice, written by Julia Wallace and Tatiana Cazzarelli. Again, I wanted to put out the number. Let me get up my Facebook page and see if we have any callers already. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. And I'm your host, Paul Rowland. Sorry, I'm just typing in. There we go. Okay, so 503-231-8187. Looks like someone already sent a message to my thing, which I'll get up. I want to talk about this article in Washington Post op-ed. Ed Mondonet claims that the protests for Black Lives are no longer about the Black struggle, but have become a white spectacle. He is wrong, and his admonishment to leave the streets is even more wrong. I know there's fierce debate, probably even within the protest scene downtown, but it's important to get a lot of different views. The militant multi-ethnic struggle needs to continue in the streets and workplaces. This wave of Black Lives Matter protests are the biggest in U.S. history at their height. 10% of the U.S. population may have taken the streets. These protests seem to be waning. Less people were in the streets. The encampment in New York City and Seattle were evicted. But in Portland, where hundreds of people were protesting, federal troops were deployed. Those federal troops proceeded to fracture a protester's skull, kidnap people off the streets, and use tear gas on protesters. And then Portland exploded. Tens of thousands have taken the streets. There is a wall of moms, a dad pod, and veterans who have come out in support of Portland protests. And I just read recently a contingent of Catholics, and many, many more. There are beautiful images, tens of thousands of people holding cell phones and chanting Black Lives Matter, mothers holding signs saying all moms were summoned when he called for his mama, in reference to George Floyd calling out for his deceased mother as he was suffocated. People are finding ways to defend themselves from the federal government's violence. People have brought shields, helmets to protect them against rubber bullets. They have brought leaf blowers to dissipate the tear gas, hockey and lacrosse sticks to shoot canisters back at police, and people put caulking in the fences to deflect pepper balls from federal troops. And it's true, the crowds are predominantly white. Portland is overwhelmingly white. Black people make up just 3% of the Portland population. However, Black people are prominent parts of the uprisings. Black Lives Matter Portland is leading contingents, and there are Black people on the wall of moms. As street battles between federal troops and Black Lives Matter protesters ensue, E.D. Mondonet, head of the Portland NAACP, penned a Washington Post op-ed entitled, Portland's protests were supposed to be about Black Lives. Now they're white spectacle. And then they read some from the article, and it's going to continue. I'm just checking in, see if anybody's called in. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. And looks like James is on the line. Let's listen to James. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. So, I wanted to talk about what you were saying about the occultism. I think that's what people really need to realize. You know, we're running into a situation where, you know, I mean, even after 3 years of people seeing it for what it is, 4 years actually, that, you know, people are still trying to approach Trump as if he is a regular politician that can fall for the normal pitfalls of a regular politician. But, you know, there's been several people have pointed out his likeness to other cult leaders such as Jim Jones and David Koresh, in terms of what he's bringing in, and in terms of prosperity gospel. I mean, he's right in line with the evangelical movement. The whole idea that, you know, you have a whole cadre of of preachers who are just their whole existence is just scamming off of people's scamming people off their desperation, and in that they're, you know, they think that they can, you know, that their faith in Jesus will heal them. You know, I mean, certainly there is a faith component to healing for people who believe, but it's not the whole thing. And but it's like, but this whole magical thinking has extended to the plight of the nation. You know, and people are so distracted by all this spectacle that they don't realize that the people who cause this problem have names and addresses and are real people, and well, real people as we understand them, not in terms of their allegiance to corporate sovereignty, but yeah, it's I just, you know, and then the fact that Trump is, you know, trotting out this black doctor who espouses the same beliefs as the prosperity gospel is, you know, it's surprising but not surprising. You know, he needs somebody to counter Dr. Fauci. You know, he's running against Dr. Fauci this year, not Joe Biden. I mean, you hardly hear anything from Joe Biden. You know, it's like Fauci's running for president, so he's running all this slam propaganda against the doctor who's just, you know, just trying to do his job.
Trying out someone who believes in that the demon seed is at the root is, I mean, it's just so new to me. I guess I'm laughing because I haven't really wrapped my head around this latest twist. But I guess one thing, just I'll let you go on. But the whole I think there's a whole other dynamic here, which is, I don't know how familiar you are with the spread of evangelical prosperity Christianity to Africa and South America and other countries, and it's you know, just one of the many tragedies within the overall tragedy of colonialism that the, you know, indigenous cultures and belief systems have been so thoroughly messed with that you get, and talk about desperate occultism. I mean, colonialism breeds either fierce resistance or sometimes even combined with, but, or, you know, a desperate occultism that, you know, you're faced with this overwhelming force, and you've got to, you know, basically fight them or join them. And so many people have fallen in to that idea of, you know, that the prosperity gospel is really, really big all over the world. Anyway, so...
Well, I mean, it's really the prosperity gospel. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's just a reiteration of what they've done to indigenous populations all over the world for, you know, for centuries. What they do is they destabilize them in order to be able to have access to raw materials in order to produce goods, but also to be able to create a subservient class of people. You know, it's not really spirituality at its core. You know, when you take into account that, you know, if you were to remove all of the magic from who Jesus was, you take him just at his face value, he died a political prisoner. You know, he died a political criminal. Crucifixion was reserved for those who committed sedition against Rome. So even Christians nowadays have it wrong. You know, they read themselves as the oppressed, in, you know, especially in the evangelical circles, they read themselves into the role of David, but they don't see themselves as Goliath. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, it's that magical thinking where, you know, they tell our people that, you know, it's like the reason why these diseases are spreading is because you're these awful, horrible sinners who have committed acts against God, when really what it was is you had a bunch of disease-ridden people coming over on a ship and, you know, coming and finding ways to scheme fairly peaceable people. You know, I mean, you read any source about how Native Americans greeted the Europeans, it was amicable, and, you know, they schemed behind their back saying, oh, these people are, you know, they're so, you know, they didn't see them as nice. They saw them as foolish and only saw the potential for what they could gain. So, I mean, the prosperity gospel is no different than, is just the latest iteration of tools for the colonizer. you know, it creates a subservient class, but it also gives them access to raw materials. I mean, if you know, that's why AMLO in Mexico is such a big deal, is because, you know, America for two centuries has been using capitalists in Mexico to be able to destabilize their economy to create a sizable cheap labor force, as they call it, in order to be able to mass produce goods and have access to raw materials. That's why AMLO is such a scary thought for America, because, you know, if they lost access to Mexican workforce, I mean, that would severely undercut the nation. So, I mean, it's just another tool in the colonizer belt. I mean, it literally has nothing to do with spirituality. I mean,
how do you feel about the present moment? Do you see a depth to what's going on? I mean, I hesitate sometimes to read too much into, you know, as I called it, I think one time on my show, their statues and such are sort of, in a way, low-hanging fruit. They're these symbols, but I think younger generations seem to be getting a lot of these connections that maybe the older generations didn't. It seems like there is a somewhat of a depth to it, although it's really hard to really get a grasp on.
Well, I think the thing that has woken most people up is that, you know, there's been a huge exodus from the mainstream church by black and brown young people because of the rediscovery of their roots, you know, and understanding that, you know, for as big a role as the church has played throughout its history after the civil rights movement, understanding how, you know, the Mexican Catholic Church and the black church were co-opted by government forces in order to be able to quell resistance.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that take. I like that, and that's one reason they come down so hard on Chicano studies in the Southwest and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as a Chicano myself, you know, and somebody who's, you know, as a brown beret, that's something that you know, you learn first off, is that, you know, that the church did play a huge role. You know, when you look at the worker strikes in Delano, you know, you look at the strikes in the factories, you know, when the Mexican church came to America, the first thing they did is they put Anglo hierarchy in it because of how strong, you know, and they made it just, they basically relegated the church to religious care and came down on anybody within the parish who stood up for Mexican workers' rights because of the huge influence of it. It's the same thing with the black church. Cornel West, you know, I can't use his word because I'm not black, but it's basically the dumbing down, you know, where they put people who directly benefited from it, who, you know, people who gained, you know, Chicanos, blacks who gained access to higher positions within the society, you know, made them complacent. You know, the generation before, they lived within that complacency, you know. So this younger generation isn't so they're not beguiled by staff.
I certainly hope so. I'll call that an optimistic and hopefully very realistic assessment of the situation, because it would definitely affirm my mine and many others' deep, I don't want to say desperate, need for, you know, for an idea that there's something real, very real, to what's happening, and that it's not just a sort of another ephemeral moment in challenging the you know, as I said, the patriarchal white supremacist culture. So anyway, I really appreciate those are some really interesting points. You really made me think, and I hope you've made some other people out there think. Got any last thoughts before I let some other people call in at 503-231-8187?
Basically just understanding that, you know, that this is just another moment in a long line of moments. You know, people are waking up, and really just understanding that, you know, we have to stop looking at this with we have to look at the totality of the situation. You know, when people start complaining about, you know, the fact that, you know, that all this destruction is happening in the streets, people don't understand that, you know, for the better part of I guess if you want to call, I mean, we can collectively say 1619 for both, you know, indigenous people and enslaved Africans, that, you know, there's been nothing but looting and destruction. It's just who has been memorialized as a hero and who has been vilified. And so we still live in that context now, even now. So just realizing that, you know, we have to look at the totality of the situation and not just the moment where it makes us uncomfortable and makes us think.
Well, thank you for that. I in my way, strive to do it. I'm not sure I've actually ever expressed it quite that well, but thank you for calling in, James. Really appreciate it. All right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. I was going to continue reading this article. I don't know, we had also George on the line. Are you still with us, George?
I am.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is also be brief. I think I heard you refer to the idea of intelligence as another one of those occult or cult movements, and I certainly found that out myself late in life. I read a couple of books, one by Ashley Montague, portraying the entire idea of IQ as another one of these phantoms thrown up by the establishment to prevent people from seeing something that was very much more real, in other words, the oppression of people. And then later I read a book by six, I think, scholars from University of California about the entire intelligence test fraud. And the title of that book was Inequality by Design, Cracking the Bell Curve Myth by Claude Fisher and others. And it revealed how the IQ tests had been exposed carefully by scholars as full of, I guess you'd call it, serious mistakes in thinking about testing. And I just thought I'd mention this because I was a victim of that. I would call it fraud. For years, I thought I'm a dumbo. I couldn't do math. I couldn't. And then I found these books, and I began to realize there's something going on here that's really pretty unnice. So I just
want the real intelligence we need is intelligence to figure out what they've pulled over on us. And if we can do that, then all the rest is less important. But yeah, I totally. Totally agree. I hadn't actually gone as far as the whole IQ question when I talked about phrenology, but it's definitely in the same. It's a more sophisticated, subtle way of trying to create a class system by other name.
And I want to thank you so much. I would agree totally.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you, George. 503-231-8187. We've got David on the line. Maybe we could just hold off for just a second. I kind of wanted to continue this article, Fighting for Black Lives, Fighting Federal Troops, What Portland NAACP Gets Wrong. It's not my article, and I don't know if it's my place to wade in to this, but I'm just reading this article. In his article, he says, E.D. Mondine, of the Portland NAACP writes, vandalizing government buildings and hurling projectiles at law enforcement draw attention, but how do these actions stop police from killing black people? What are Antifa and other leftist agitators achieving for the cause of black equality? The Wall of Moms, while perhaps well-intentioned, ends up redirecting attention away from the urgent issue of murdered black bodies. This might ease the conscience of white affluent women who have previously been silent in the face of black oppression, but it's fair to ask, are they really furthering the cause of justice, or is this another example of white co-optation? And then the author's article continues. He argues that the focus has changed away from BLM and that this is to the detriment of the movement. He goes on to argue that this spectacle is precisely what Trump wants to distract in these empty battles, these, quote, empty battles where, quote, they have the advantage. And it continues, a quote from the article, this is a moment for serious action to once again take up the mantle of the civil rights era by summoning the same conviction and determination our forebears did, end quote. And what is that serious action that Mondine suggests? Get out of the streets, wait, and vote. Anyway, this goes on. It's a longer article, about halfway through. But I do want to respect my callers, 503-231-8187. We're about halfway through, so get your calls in now. Let's go to David. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, morning. Greetings from foggy San Francisco. Hey, I was glad that previous caller was talking about the mega churches and the spread of the virulent, right-wing Christianity. I was just going to remind people, Oliver North, almost 40 years ago, Oliver North, during the Ronald Reagan administration, tricked a whole bunch of mega churches into doing money laundering for him. And just like Epstein has blackmailed tens of thousands of people, probably some of the most powerful, political leaders in the world have been extorted by this same group of people. Don't underestimate the power of blackmail and money laundering to get good people to stay silent. So, a thing to back this up, there's a book that came out shortly after Oliver North. It was called In God's Name by David Yalop. And it talked about the Vatican Church and how it got tricked into doing money laundering by organized crime. And to this day, the Catholic Church has had a tough time, breaking free from that extortion. If they were guilty back then, they must be guilty now, sort of thing. And Billy Graham, he was said to have tried to extort one of the famous gangsters, Bugsy Siegel, to coming down from the rafters and getting saved. And he paid him $25,000, and Bugsy Siegel stiffed him. So, but this whole thing, we're in a situation right now of what's called hyperinflation, and the inflation rate is going up so fast that everybody is grasping at straws. And I'm baby boom, so when I think of a fair minimum wage, I think of 1968, when the minimum wage was $1.60 and an ounce of gold was $32. And when it took you 20 hours to buy 1 ounce of gold at minimum wage. So now, if you were to take the ounce of gold today, this morning, it's $1,947, and you divide that by 20, you're going to have a $97.47 minimum wage, and instead of taking you 20 hours to buy an ounce of gold, it's going to take you 260 hours to buy an ounce of gold at minimum wage. So that's the beginning stages of hyperinflation.
Before and we war. Remember hyperinflation leading up to World War II. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, exactly. Wheelbarrows full of money to buy an ounce of gold. And it's true. It was wheelbarrows full. I've got my grandfather's old stamp collection, and there are these postage stamps, and one of them says, I think it's 50,000 Deutschmarks for a postage stamp, and then they cross that out and they put in 2 million. So it's an insane 11, and if you hated his guts, you'd get yearly cost 11. But when the inflation rate was going up insanely, so that it showed that the hyperinflation was basically the tool that they used to trick people into obedience. So I just remind people with George Washington, when he was freezing at Valley Forge, it was because the British had counterfeited the patriotic money. The patriots were using continental dollars, and the British were counterfeiting them. So, of course, Washington couldn't buy firewood, he couldn't buy bullets, he couldn't buy uniforms, he couldn't buy anything. And so they were basically losing because of this counterfeiting operation. And so, after he won by going across the river there, Ben Franklin and them got out the printing presses and they created a new design that couldn't be counterfeited. And
we're going a little afield here, David, but I get your basic point.
Yeah, come up with it.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. 503-231-8187. Looks like we've got Karen online. Go ahead, Karen.
Good morning, Paul. Thank you for this conversation. This is really great. I I just wanted to bring a slightly different perspective to the E.D. Mondonnet letter kerfuffle. I essentially agree that Christianity, evangelical Christianity of whites, the slave owners, so to speak, has been enormously destructive. And I essentially agree that the Catholic Church in many ways has been very oppressive in its relationship with African-American people, with Latinx people. At the same time, it's not exactly black and white. And a group that I consider fairly middle of the road, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, and I'm not a member, I'm a Jew, so it's a Christian organization, came out with a letter on July 24th, and in which they say, "We stand in solidarity with demonstrators on the streets of Portland and around the world who are seeking to bring awareness of racist policies and our complacency that has allowed them to be passed down from generation to generation." And the letter goes on to say that, let's see, there's something about they don't approve of the violence, but they understand that that the Homeland Security presence has spurred it on and that sort of thing. It's not against the demonstrations, and I believe E.D. Mondonnet is probably in Ecumenical Ministries. He's a reverend. I know him from the NAACP because I used to go to the meetings when Joanne headed it up. So I just think that we are in dangerous waters. We do not want to alienate any supporters of progressivism, and that we need to be very respectful across religious lines. I get why people are very frustrated, and at times I am also enraged at so-called religious positions on things. But if we just keep dismissing one another, our coalitions can't form properly. So that's all I'm saying. I'm just saying we need tolerance, and we need to look at John Lewis, who was a reverend. We need to look at Reverend Martin Luther King. We need to look at Reverend William Barber, who, if he's Reverend, his actually Bishop Dr. William Barber, brilliant head of the Poor People's Campaign.
I think it is a more complicated question. I mean, there's a as James was saying, he's basically saying that Christianity got corrupted, and he was saying that Christianity was basically used as a tool for colonization. Those are both true, but within, there's always been sort of an in some ways underground or oppositional strain of Christianity, which sort of harked back to the role of Jesus as a resister of oppression, and so that people have crystallized. You know, there's liberation theology, which grew up in Central and South America, and there's been liberation theologies all over the world, including a kind of black liberation theology. So that's all true. You know, I guess there's generational things going on. You know, yeah, I don't know. It's a thorny thing to run into, to wade into, as I said, and I certainly don't mean any disrespect to E.D. Mondonnet as a person or as an activist. I'm sure he's probably done way more than me over the years, certainly for his people and for the cause of social justice. I guess I was just putting this out in the spirit that some people took issue with some of the ways that, you know, he was being very critical of things that he may not have known that much about either. So I think it's legitimate that people were criticizing him. I don't think they were, I don't think they were condemning him, but I think criticism is always valuable.
And I think criticism, I'm critical of that position somewhat myself. And I do support the demonstrators, and I know that people are extremely well-intentioned, and they're putting their bodies on the line, and I know that we have to fight tyranny, which is what we're seeing in downtown Portland. I agree with you in all essential points, Paul. I'm not accusing you of anything. I I just think we need to be able to talk about these things in very nuanced ways and look for support and for loving kindness and compassion towards one another, because these are extremely difficult times. So that's all. I think right you on. Exemplify that most of the time, all the time. I don't have any real disagreements on this, Paul. So thank you so much. You have a great day.
No, well, thank you. We could have continued that conversation, but 503-231-8187. We only have 15 minutes left. So if you want to call in, looks like we got one more caller, at least on stack. I was going to say a few more things in response I'm glad Karen called in, because it is always a more nuanced, and when you're fighting against an apparent fascist or proto-fascist, and the climate is melting down, and it's dire times, and so everybody's feeling it, and everybody's feeling this need to sort of coalesce at a particular moment, and it's hard. It's always hard in the thick of the battle to really try to sort things out it's hard, but that's struggle. So I appreciate everybody who's engaged in struggle, thinking about it, talking about it. Let's go to Jason. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a real quick comment in regards to the evangelical influence on the current administration. Far as I know, a lot of the evangelists believe that we're currently in the end of times at the moment, and that according to the Bible, we're supposed to have an incompetent leader during the end of times. So I've been hearing that President.
Now, they say that it's in the Bible. Do you know where exactly it's supposed to be in the Bible?
You know, I'm not educated enough to speak on that. All I know is that the president, I believe, is using this as a political advantage, basically acting overly incompetent, doing extremely stupid things on purpose, just to appeal to the base of the evangelists. So I know he's doing a lot of other really stupid things to appeal to his other bases of support, but I just wanted your feelings on that, and I'll take your comment off the air. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, as usual, as often I should say, I have to say that I never like to be put in the position of being any kind of authoritative voice on most subjects. I feel like some subjects I feel very competent on. Now, as to what's going on in Trump's mind, I've heard this idea that, you know, they hark back to, I can't remember, there's certain biblical leaders that were, I think it's more that were immoral, that were not up to the standards, the moral codes of the day, who nonetheless ushered, you know, did the dirty work that was needed at the time. And again, I've read articles about this, but I think it's more incompetence. I guess that could sort of be similar. I don't know. I mean, I think he definitely is smart enough to know that he is seen in that way by the evangelicals, whether it's incompetence or immoral or whatever, for sure, he definitely makes use of that. I mean, he uses all the cards he can, because, you know, I think there is a certain desperation. I do think there is a desperation in him keeping his financial records out of public view, the details of the loans from Deutsche Bank, his possible mafia connections. There's a lot of skeletons in his closet, and you know, I think him becoming president was somewhat of a desperate ploy. So yeah, I think he's got a hell of a lot to lose, and he's going to pull out whatever card he can, and you know, up to including a lot of the things that people are talking about, the danger of, you know, some kind of a, you know, overall martial law, or you know, calling off the elections, or declaring the elections null and void, or anyway. We got Mark on the line. Let's go to Mark, and then Robbie's up on stack after that. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Paul. Another great show. I'm hoping you might comment on these ideas of mine. that we are in late stage capitalism, that we are actually witnesses to a free fall lockdown economy. And capitalism is full of crisis, as rain clouds are full of rain. And one of the contradictions is that you really can't run an economy on speculation and accumulation, and that there has to be distribution justice for an economy really to be an economy.
Well, capitalism was born in speculation. I mean, you'd say it's almost inherently a speculative system.
Now, Pope Francis is the first non-European. He's an Argentinian, and he's really been almost completely censored since 2013. This is staggering to me, you know. He's never mentioned in 7 years. He has said that this economy kills, and that the market and competition are fetishes. They're not natural laws. I think we need to hear this criticism, and that's why I enjoyed hearing Karen and the other person, because I think our system is totally broken. If we can't even secure Social Security by eliminating the cap, which is, I think, around 160,000, then we are really incompetent, that our system is just representing the super rich.
I hear there was something inserted in this latest legislation. Is that what it is, about Social Security?
Well, we need to cut this eliminate the cap. If you earn $5 million, you just pay Social Security on the first $160,000, which is an aberration.
Oh, I see.
You
okay.
Know? And so it could be solvent for 75 years, and all this means is public spirit and trust between the generations. You know, right now we have a feudal system. And we don't even have job creation. We don't have a national pandemic. We don't have a national investment program, a national
education program. Well, that's one thing that I do appreciate about Biden is actually, you know, talking fairly solidly about a lot of that stuff. So despite
absolutely, I hope Trump doesn't buy the election. And I thank you for your energy, for your passion.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. We only have, about 7 or 8 minutes left. And Rob, you always seem to call in at the last minute. You like to get the last word, I think. I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Rob. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I love the conversation. I actually identify as a Christian anarchist, and that's just because it makes Christians and anarchists mad at the same time. I find it kind of funny. Yeah, Jesus was the first anarchist, flipping over tables. And I wanted to bring up the best way that I find fighting fascism, this white supremacist Christianity, is using their own words and using their own teachings against them. So that's why, one of the reasons why I call myself a Christian anarchist, is because I would go up to Joey Gibson. I'd say, hey, you're part of Patriot Prayer. You know, what about Leviticus 19:34? You know, Leviticus 19:34 is when a foreigner resides among you in your land, you're supposed to treat them with respect because you yourself are, you know, a foreigner on this land. You know, there's so many amazing Bible quotes that truly go against, you know, what the right has turned Christianity into, which is why I research it and why I read it.
Series Messiah?
What was that?
Did you see that Netflix series, Messiah? Just curious.
No, I have not.
Oh, it's interesting. Anyway, there's a sort of a Messiah figure arises in the sort of an end time sort of scenario. Anyway, whatever. There's also, I'll let you finish, but there's also a book called Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth by Reza Aslan. Really, really recommend it. I just finished that a couple months ago.
I've heard of that one. I have heard of that one, yeah.
It's awesome. It really brings back the figure of Jesus as a political figure. In some ways, basically says that the sort of the establishment of Christianity as a real official religion was really kind of the first sort of, as I started the show with, sort of the desperate occultism, which sort of put in this whole idea of the non-bodily or the bodily resurrection. Anyway, I could go on and on, but yeah, we only have a couple minutes left. Go ahead and finish your thought.
No, yeah, that was totally that's what's going on. I kind of enjoy conspiracies, and so I think that Judas was actually Jesus's best disciple, and the reason why Jesus knew one of the people was going to betray him is because they told Judas to. It's a really complicated situation, but when you uncover it, Christian Gnosticism, G-N-O-S, Gnosticism, Christian mystics is what it is. They were very enlightened individuals for their time, and they were completely erased, and the state used, the Romans used Christianity to control people once everybody, turned to that trend. But I do want to bring up the white spectacle thing. That is totally, that made me so upset. One Washington Post opinion editorial, made 30 different national news outlets. One op-ed made 30 national news outlets, and it's calling it a white spectacle. When you watch news as much as I do, you can see the things that all the news media outlets will pick up on right away. And the fact that they said, it was a white spectacle, all this is doing is dividing us up. And it's sad because I think a lot of people, not from Portland and aren't on the ground. I've probably been downtown the last 45 days out of the last 60. And it's like watching it grow, watching it do its thing is a really beautiful thing. And yeah, there's disagreements. It's messy on there. But, I just wanted to bring up, it's we can't be criticizing other protesters because they're acting, they're stepping up, they're doing something. Let's just kind of give the benefit of the doubt to people on our side. The thing that makes me sad about Portland the most is that when you have such a group of like-minded people, I don't know, there's like people that then just look for the next, somebody to criticize. And it's like for what was happening, I'm Native American for the most part. And I'm extremely offended by the flag. I say extremely offended by the flag. I'm not happy seeing the American flag when people wave it. I don't know what part of America is good besides the genocide of, indigenous people, the wealth that was built off the slaves, the Yemen bombing. I'm not going to vote for Biden because I would just have to, organize and protest against his administration like I did Obama's administration. So when people wave the flag, I don't understand it. But at the same time, when there's someone down there who's not a patriot prayer, Proud Boy type, if they're waving an American flag, and they're there for Black Lives Matter, I think it's just a time that we don't have to take that battle to educate that person on the ground right there. We should just kind of leave that leniency and expect that people are going to support it, and that we can, if they can help our side, we need to just be supportive of it. That's what I wanted to get out.
Okay,
to people.
Well, right on. I wanted to just finish out by reading a couple more paragraphs of this article so people at least get a sense, and then just sort of refer to it again. Thank you, Robbie. Always good to hear from you. So it talks more about this article by E.D. Mondine, and I'm not picking a fight with him. What's my place in this battle? I don't know. I'm just a talk show host. But first off, it's a lie to imply that Portland is not talking about Black Lives Matter. There are countless videos of people chanting it and Black people leading it and leading in chants and actions. There are countless pictures and signs. Mondine's implication is a straight-up lie. And secondly, federal troops kidnapping Black Lives Matter protesters requires a response to that issue. By defining Black issues in such a ridiculously narrow way, Mondine is against protesting the violence of federal troops against Black people. Mondine is calling for people to leave the streets full of tear gas and rubber bullets, that is, to stop fighting the federal troops who occupy the city in favor of less threatening civic engagement. Basically, back to business as usual. Business as usual did not build the movement. It will certainly not end systemic racism. The truth is that the great plan put forward by Portland NAACP president is to get white people, Black people, everyone out of the streets and to have folks go home and wait, presumably until November, to vote for shoot Black people in the leg Biden. The NAACP is against confrontations with police and the federal troops. Instead, I don't know, I think they may be overgeneralizing, but whatever, it's an article, I'm reading it. Instead, we are supposed to hope for politicians to make the right backroom deal, to compromise and negotiate, to donate money to our oppressors, and for the masses in the streets to go home and wait. Anyway, let's see. But these protests are different. We're making connections. We're talking about Black trans lives and about Black women's lives. We're going to fight against evictions. We want to abolish the police and prisons, as well as ICE and Customs and Border Protection, one of the repressive forces in Portland. The fight against the feds in Portland is one and the same with the fight against police violence and the fight against ICE detention centers, layoffs, and evictions. We saw how the governments claim there's no money for education or health care, but drop billions on police budgets. And these are black issues because in workplaces, in the streets, in healthcare, in schools, black people are the most oppressed and exploited. Systemic racism means that it shows up in every aspect of the rotten capitalist system in which we live. So we don't want a seat at the table with our oppressors. We want to flip the table over. We don't want your system. And the only thing that can fight against police violence, the violence of federal troops, of Democrats and Republicans, is a radical multi-ethnic struggle in the streets and in our workplaces. We don't need allies who blindly follow reformist black leaders. We want working class comrades to struggle against every aspect of this racist capitalist system, especially the issues affecting the black working class, amongst the most exploited and oppressed sector in the U.S. We need comrades fighting for revolution and organizing politically to make it so. With that, that's the tail end. I read much of Fighting for Black Lives, Fighting Federal Troops, What Portland NAACP Gets Wrong from Left Voice, came out just a couple days ago. Okay, that's the end of the show. I get the last word. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Always good. My name's Paul Rowland for Wednesday Talk Radio and KBOO Community Radio, signing off.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the soul.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Salem Progressive Film Series presentation of the